At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back. Welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, May 2nd, 2024 edition. Happy post-Fed day, and a lot is happening in today's markets. You have Apple earnings after hours, and so much news is probably crossing your screens every single minute, every single hour, every single day. And there's a lot to unpack, and that's what we are here to help you with, is to navigate these unusual times, an era of higher inflation, higher market volatility, higher interest rate volatility, and fiscal dominance, a period of heavy government spending. And ultimately, that manifests in higher nominal GDP growth, higher earnings, but also a more, in many ways, confusing longer-term perspective or longer-term projection for the overall economy. So how do you balance kind of the longer term issues that continue kind of build with shorter term trends? And that's what we are to help you do. Time frame is very important. So many people ignore that. They think, hey, this is a good company, for example. And you know, you've seen that lately with companies like Starbucks being down big, and Nike, and you know, they have their issues near term, but the question is, will those iron out and eventually turn around? And most likely they do. So from a time frame perspective, they may not be great buys today for the next 3-6 months, but you could argue they're good buys for the next 3-6 years. And you have to square those two things. You have to be willing to handle the volatility of anything that you're buying, both the volatility expected over the near term and the long term. And so that is one way to frame every investment. There are multiple ways to frame every investment. And you have to think about that. The risk versus reward, the pros and cons of every asset class, every company, everything that you can buy out there in the market. There's two sides to every coin. There's arguments both ways. But a savvy investor knows how to weigh the pros and cons for their own particular situation and their own gain. And that's what we're to help you do, to become a savvy investor. And we do that by answering your finance and investment questions. So I encourage you to reach out and leave your message if you're listening after hours and if you're listening via our live stream or an AM 1220 in the Silicon Valley area. You can call right now and talk to us. So I encourage that at 888-99-CHART. Now we're going to talk about the market performance for today and run down some show topics. But as usual, we're going to hit our first caller question now.
Hi, I'm calling you about company Transmedics Group, ticker TMDX. If you could provide any info, I'd appreciate it. And I'll be listening. Thanks.
Ooh, Transmedics Group, about a $4 billion market cap. It just looks like recently had earnings. Yeah, yesterday. And it was up pretty big. It closed the day on, what would that be? Today's Thursday. So that would be on Tuesday. It closed around 94. Then yesterday it closed at 117. And today it closed even higher at 124 and change. No dividend here, but what they do is develop portable warm blood perfusion systems that allow for living organ transplants. Interesting. So a medical product company, and their business is doing pretty well. Revenues last quarter were up 133%. Earnings were up 500%. And this is one of those names that's been a money loser for many, many years. And now, for the first time this year, expectation is for profit. 81 cents per share expected this year, $1.22 next year. Problem is, as I said, that's a $124 stock. So you're paying 100 times forward-looking earnings. So that means there has to be an extensive amount of growth going forward. Now, the positive here is that earnings are positive, that you're heading in the right direction. Now, cash flow remains negative trailing 12 months, and it actually is not getting better. So I don't like that. So I want to know, what is driving these earnings projections? Not just growth, but the fact that their operating margins remain negative. I don't like that. Shares outstanding, like most biotechs, it's been going up for a while and is continuing to go higher. So a lot of what's happening here is pricing in a very rosy future. And I don't like to, I'm not going to pay four times, five times a market multiple for something that, you know, probably has good application. It's obviously gaining market share here with the revenue growth. But you have to really continue to knock it out of the park for many, many years to come for this valuation to make sense. So, you know, if you're looking to add a growth name, this would be a way to do that. I just don't feel confident that they'll actually be able to grow into this valuation. But near term, the trends are positive. The chart likely will probably head higher in the near term. But once again, as I said at the top of the show, might be strong near term, but longer term, this valuation just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We're heading into a short break. On the other side, we'll talk about the planned topics for today, as well as run down the market activity for May 2nd, 2024. Now, please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk Voice Bank. If you're listening via our live stream or an AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
When listener questions are played on the InvestTalk podcast,
how do you guys determine a value stock?
The caller voices are amplified many thousands of times.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan and BAC.
How do you see this looking forward?
I'm 25 years old and have a question about retirement funds.
And the unbiased answers from Justin Klein.
That's why it's trading so cheap, because there's a lot of regulatory risk here.
And Steve Peasley.
I kind of like it here. If I was going to buy Tyson Foods, this is where I'd buy it.
Benefit the entire InvestTalk community.
Thank you for what you guys do.
That's why 24/7, rain or shine, no matter how simple or how complex, your questions make a difference.
Symbol BKE, what's your outlook?
And InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, we have a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes, and here are some planned topics. Our main focus point is about the evolution of the fund industry. Mutual funds have been around for many decades, but things have evolved. And we're going to talk about the good and the bad of that evolution since the early 80s. We also have some other stories to dig into as well. One is in regards to monetary policy and the limits of monetary policy. So many people focus on, what's the Fed going to do? Are they going to raise rates or lower rates? And what impact that will have on the broader economy? And the reality is, policy impacts some industries dramatically and others very little. And so there are limits to what the Fed can do, especially in a time with so much debt that we have at the sovereign level. So we're going to discuss that and the way to think about monetary policy and its broader impact on the economy. Also, working from home. And there are a lot of studies early on in the pandemic that working from home boosted efficiency. Well, that narrative is starting to reverse. So we're going to look at that. And then lastly, will the U.S. ban imports of Russian uranium? Potentially, we're going to look at that story as well. We also have some voice bank questions. One is in regards to Skyworks, as the other is selling a loss and avoiding taxes. And we also have some questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions live. Just give us a call at 888-99-CHART. We love those live calls and interacting with you. Now, let's take a look at the market today. We had certainly a down day yesterday, or at least it was a modestly down day. And we closed near the lows yesterday. And that was actually generally, it tends to be a negative sign for the following day. But markets actually bounced back nicely. Large caps are up about 1%. Small caps actually did the best, up 1.42% on the day. And I think that was because rates dropped. Rates actually fell. You saw short-term rates rise yesterday, but fell back today. So small caps certainly liked that. Like I said, at the top of the show, we had Apple after hours. They look up about 6 or 7%. After those earnings announcement, were there any big down stocks today? Not really any large ones, no huge movers, frankly. But yeah, it was an interesting day in markets. And tomorrow is the jobs number for the month of April, and I actually think we might miss here on the jobs number. And frankly, that's what the Fed is looking for. It's pretty clear to cut rates. Is yes, inflation isn't all the way to their target, but it is in the ballpark. And I think that gives them some level of comfort to be ready to react to the other side of their dual mandate, which is maximum employment. And if the employment situation deteriorates, that would, I think, spark a Fed rate cut over the next couple of meetings. So I think they're on watch for that, is for a clear break in the jobs market. The JOLTS data, the jobs openings data on Wednesday, that did come in a bit lower than expected. So that typically can be a harbinger for the actual jobs announcement on Friday. But we shall see. So we'll be watching that tomorrow. All right. Let's go ahead and play another caller question from 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Justin and Luke. This is Paulo from Gaithersburg, Maryland. I have a question about Skyworks Solutions. They had like some bad numbers for the last quarter, and I think the outlook was not too good. That's why the stock got down quite a bit. And I'm invested in the company. I was thinking if this is like a fantastic buy opportunity, because I don't really care much about the short-term noise, and I really think like the company is good, but like maybe you guys crunch the numbers and know if this is a buy at this point, or maybe we should hold back a little bit because I'm about to double down, honestly speaking. Thank you so much for all your work you guys do. Bye-bye.
All right, looking at Skyworks Solutions, and yeah, they had a rough earnings report. This is one of names we own for clients. It one of the few ones that had a poor earnings number, but we agree with you that they have a very strong business long-term, near-term. There's some weakness in the handset market that's been driving their business to slow, and earnings are expected this year to be $5.48, but bounce back next year to $6.18. It's about a $90 stock, so about 15 times forward-looking earnings, but they have a very, very good business. Our value is closer to 100 and, where is it? I got to pull this up here. Our value is closer to $125 per share. Now it's at, once again, 90. So We like Skyworks, and we would use this as an opportunity to build up the position over time, because very little debt on its balance sheet, and longer term, their solutions, Skyworks solutions, will continue to be in high demand, especially if the handset market bounces back, which we expect it to over the long term. So yes, we like Skyworks down here. Now we're heading into a short break, and we always enjoy your voice bank calls, but most importantly, we love your live calls during the podcast at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a quick look at your financial to-do list. At the top, make that phone call to the InvestTalk Anytime listener line. 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point is about the evolution of the fund industry over the past 40 years or so. And over the last 40 years, the number of funds available is up 1,000%, tenfold. And costs are lower, disclosures are better, and there's just a lot more choices, including passive funds, which we'll talk about the pros and cons of that. But the quality of outcomes clearly for investors are better. 40 years ago, about 12% of households owned mutual funds. And most of that was in money market funds. Only $140 billion were in other asset classes, which frankly isn't a lot. And back then, most people who bought mutual funds were working with some sort of a broker. Somebody maybe at their bank, and they were typically selling them commission-based funds, A-share funds, C-share funds. And that made up the largest chunk of the universe. There were only 900 funds available at that time. And mostly just government bond funds, large cap stock funds, and hybrid funds. And for equity funds, the asset-weighted expense ratio was 80 basis points for no-load funds, and many more that were significantly higher in fees because they had front-end and back-end loads, which for everyone out there, you should never pay a load, never buy an A share or a C share that carries a load. Okay. Now, fast forward to today, we now have 10,400 mutual funds and ETFs across 130 different investment categories. And for equity funds, the average fee has gone from that 90 basis points all the way down to 80 basis points. It was 80 basis points. Now it's 30 basis points. So 50 basis points doesn't sound like a lot, but year after year, it can add up. And loaded funds are way less prevalent. Hopefully they'll be gone forever at some point soon, but nonetheless, there's enough people that realize you don't need to pay those loads. Now, ETFs account for about a third of the industry as a whole, the fund industry. And obviously, passive is now surpassed active. And now you can get passive and active in almost every asset category. Now, that is not necessarily a good thing. I've said this many times. The further you get away from large cap equities, the less passive makes sense. And in some instances, even large cap passive may not make sense. But back in 1984, balanced funds were very rare. You had the Vanguard Wellington, that was kind of the first one. But now with targeted funds, there are a lot more balanced choices like that. So in general, the fund industry has evolved, and there are more choices, and it's been better for the investor. It's frankly one of the best innovations in finance over the last 50 years. But there are downsides. There are negatives. The way we got to this place with so many options is that it's been easy to launch and market these funds. But that means that bad funds come about pretty easily. A lot of gimmicky funds that latch on to the latest trends, the sexy titles. And we know through history, when those funds launch, it's usually at the worst time from a market timing perspective. Usually when that asset class is over-owned, over-interested in, and overvalued. Then you have other tools like market timing vehicles. Think of leveraged ETFs. They're fine for trading, but we know the vast majority of people that buy those and trade them, they don't do well. They lose money. And there's still a lot of them. Morningstar's database has 70 funds specializing in digital assets, for example. We know the nebulous nature of that. 50 that focus on just limited partnerships, 130 inverse trading funds, so trying to short the market, 190 leverage trading funds, and 340 thematic funds. You know, from AI and robotics to clean energy to whatever is sexy at that particular time. And we know those are speculative vehicles. It's not about building wealth. So there's still pitfalls in the fund industry to watch out for. But in general, the industry is moving in the right direction. And the investment experience for most investors is better. Pay less, capture more of the fund's returns. It's easier to transact with ETFs, right? Intraday trading. And the data is easier to find, and the disclosures are better. So there's a lot of positive trends that will probably continue within the fund industry, but that does not mean that all mutual funds or all ETFs are created equal. There are pitfalls there, and you have to do your research on them just like you need to do with individual companies. It's a different type of research, but it's still research nonetheless. So don't get complacent by saying, oh, it's a mutual fund or it's an ETF. It's broadly diversified. I can look at the title of the fund and know what it's in, what it's invested in. No, not how it works. It's more complicated than that. And you still need to do your due diligence. So a lot of positive, but there's still red flags from time to time. Now we're heading into a break. I'm ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART. At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne.com, HackerOne.com.
In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic, why hundreds of U.S. banks may be at risk of failure. One expert says most at-risk banks aren't insolvent or even close to insolvent. They are just stressed. Now, let's pivot over to a live call and talk to Thomas. He is in Santa Cruz, and he's looking at URNM, which is the Sprott Uranium Miners ETF. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
So I own a small portion of it, small being 2% about of my portfolio. It was up pretty good today. It's one of those plays where I'm just so mentally committed to holding it for so long that it's like, how much can I really own in terms of the industry of just owning uranium miners? So I really, part one of my question is, how much is a reasonable amount percentage wise to have in a portfolio? Do you think this is a good place to be in terms of the ETFs for uranium, and is miners a good way of playing uranium similar to gold? And is what would be a good place for pullbacks to add more to? Like today it's up to 53. My average is about in like the $48 mark, and it seems to, when it pulls back to 48, it seems to jump right back up these last few months here. So love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I will say the largest holding of this ETF, Cameco, is the largest holding of some of our strategies, and is around the 5% level of the entire portfolio. So if you're at 2, I think going up from there, and obviously this is well diversified because Cameco is only 15%. It's the largest holding of this fund, but it's only 15%. So it just depends on which one you rather own, but this one's fine. You said it's 2% of your portfolio. I have no problem doubling that from there, obviously. We're higher than that. And it's going through a consolidation period here over the past, really since the start of the year. It's still up on the year, but it's had some decent pullbacks, right? It peaked out around $58 per share, and recently in early March, it hit 45, and now it's at 53. So I think that there's more upside potential here than downside, so I wouldn't get cute with it. I would just add the position, sure, to be frank. But it's a good way to play it.
Fair enough. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks for the call. That was URNM, which is the Sprott Uranium Miners ETF. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends about our Invest Talk audio podcast that is now available also in video form over on our YouTube channel. And we receive finance investment questions in the comment section of those videos. And here's one that came in yesterday. Jim Lay says, your thoughts on APH, APH, which is Amphenol, and this is a name that is certainly strong. Its relative strength is all the way up at 92, and they make electrical, electronic, and fiber optic connectors, interconnect systems, and cables, and their earnings just continue to power higher. My issue, though, is that it's pretty expensive. You're talking about a $121 stock that's expected to earn nearly $4 next year. So let's say they do make $4. That's going to be an over 30 times multiple. And revenues growth last quarter was 9%. Earnings growth was 16%. So that's my issue. I think it's just a bit expensive. But it is a very good company. And it's frankly a name that's on our watch list. Okay. $2.2 billion in free cash flow on a $74 billion enterprise value. But a 3% free cash flow yield. That's okay, but it's not amazing. Return on equity is at 25%. Return on invested capital, 16%. Both of those very, very solid numbers. So the moral story here is great balance sheet, great business, just multiples are a bit too high for my liking. I would like to get this back below $100 per share, and then I would start to contemplate Amphenol. But absolutely should be on your watch list. And I would be trying to target a pullback for a buy of it. Thanks for the call. That was Amphenol. APH is the symbol. Now let's talk about monetary policy. We just had the Fed meeting yesterday, and everyone's focused on whether they're going to raise rates or lower rates. But it's pretty clear that we are in a new regime where maybe monetary policy doesn't work the same way it used to. Now, it never was a very precise tool. We call it a blunt instrument in the industry. But an environment where fiscal policy is dominant and can impact demand faster than the lags of monetary policy, how much can you truly rely on what the Fed is doing? Yes, higher rates have helped to pull down inflation a good amount. But how much of that was supply chains just healing post-pandemic? And how much of that was really the monetary policy transmitting to the broader economy? Because if you look at it, it's had a pretty weak impact in this cycle. And that's mainly because, as we talked about before, people have these mortgage rates that are locked in at low rates. The FHA had a paper between 1998 and the pandemic. The share of Americans with mortgage rates locked in more than one percentage point below the market rate was never above 40%. Now it's above 70% that have one more than three percentage points below the current market rate. Think about that. That is that rate lock that is there no matter really what the Fed does, unless they drastically lower rates. But that causes other issues. Now, higher rates has a clear impact on manufacturing and construction, for example, very capital-intense businesses. But the economy continues to evolve to be more service-oriented. And so there's two options. Either the policy that the Fed has to wait longer for the impact of these rates, or maybe they change the way they look at inflation. Maybe focusing on the industries that actually do have an impact, or are impacted, excuse me, by higher interest rates. Now, if you look at the places where inflation is still sticky, places like shelter, motor vehicle insurance, for example, those all continue to be impacted by supply chains. And the fact that supply chains, while much better than they were a few years ago, still have some issues. And this is why rates need to stay higher for longer. Now, that creates potential stresses in those areas that are impacted by higher rates. And certain parts of the economy and consumers are impacted more than others. If you have a mortgage at 3%, your cost of living is pretty much locked in. As opposed to a renter, right, that's going to continue to float. So monetary policy is a catch-all tool, but it has varying influences on different parts of the economy. And you can argue that higher rates actually stoke inflation. We've talked about the interest paid on the debt, but think about, once again, capital-intensive businesses. The hurdle rate for investment to bring supply on in various industries is now higher because they can either take that money, invest it, put it in treasuries at 5%, or they can invest it in this part of their business to increase supply. But that comes with risk. And so they're going to need a requisite level of return on their capital in order to take on that endeavor. And so higher rates can mean that supply response is slower. So there are limits to monetary policy. It can help, but other tools are likely needed. Coordination may be necessary between monetary and fiscal, and maybe even government policy to help with supply side. So I wanted to really discuss that because it's so important to realize that our economies are complex. And it's not everything is created equal. Not every industry is impacted the same way by the same factors. And so when you're looking at different industries, different investments, the broader economy, you need to understand that. Otherwise, you're going to conflate two things that shouldn't be linked together. Now, when people take the time to leave an InvestTalk podcast review on iTunes, we'd like to thank them for their courtesy by getting to their questions quickly. Dismal Scientist says, I've joined paid services, but InvestTalk is a free podcast. Is where I've learned the most about how markets work. Now I'm thinking about MYRG, MYRG for a long-term hold. My Roth, what are your thoughts? This is a name that just fell on earnings. Let me pull it up here. It fell, closed yesterday around $166 per share. Today it closed right around $152 per share. They provide transmission distribution service for electric utility industry and contract. Okay, so they service the utility industry. Let me pull this up. I tend to like that. The demand for our electric grid continues to increase, and they help with the transmission and distribution segments, providing design. I'm just reading there. I haven't heard of this company, so I'm trying to get a sense of what they do. Provides design, engineering, procurement, construction, upgrade, maintenance, and repair services and transmission and distribution networks and substation facilities. I like that. I definitely like that business. Now let's take a look at their earnings trends. Last year, $5.40 in earnings, $6.42 expected this year, and $8.12 the following year. However, last quarter, revenues were flat. Earnings were down 19%. No dividend yield here. They also have very little debt on their balance sheet. So I like that. $2.5 billion market cap. So definitely a small cap name. Return equity, 15%. Solid, but not amazing. So, but good business. It's generally an uptrend, even though it's pulled back here from 180 down to 152. I'm going to give this one a thumbs up. Enterprise value to EBITDA, going forward, right around 12 times. I have no problem with that. I like this solid business in a good area, good balance sheet, and it's pulled back to good support. So I'm going to give MYRG a thumbs up. Now let's go talk to Sunny in San Francisco, looking at DJP, which is a Barclays, what is it, an iPath fund? Can you tell me more about this, Sammy? Sorry, Sammy,
thanks for taking my call. Sure. I was asking about stock ticker symbol D as in dog, J, Jack, and T as in Tom.
DJT. The Trump.
Correct.
Got it, okay.
I would like to get your thoughts on that. What do you think, you know, is going on with the stock? It's been going up lately. What would you have to say?
The business it's not really a business, right? If you look at their profits and their revenues, it's next to none. Last quarter, revenues were $800,000. Profits were negative. You know, this is not a business that is worth anywhere near $6.6 billion valuation. Not. There's no argument that it can anywhere. Even $600 million would be a great stretch. And this is 11 times that number. So, you know, you're going to get bounces like this that happen, especially companies that have high short interests and people are betting against, et cetera. This is not an investment opportunity at this point. It, like I said, it's probably a better short. It's going to be very volatile, so you have to have a really strong stomach. But, you know, Truth Social hasn't really been able to garner a level of scale. It's an echo chamber, and, you know, we unfortunately in today's tech world, a lot of people kind of get in their own echo chamber, and it's just one way for, you know, the MAGA right to be in their own little echo chamber. And so that's going to limit their ability to scale, to sell ads, etc. And this is a stone cold short over the long term, but obviously near term, you're going to get big sell-offs like it had from, you know, nearly $80 per share all the way down to nearly 20. And now it's back up to 48 and change, but it's not an investment opportunity. If anything, it's a short that's going to be extremely volatile. Thanks for the call. Now, this Invest Talk, I'm Justin Klein, and we have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Stephen, Justin, Ali from Detroit calling. Just had a question about how people sell stocks in order to write off taxes in the case that they're at a loss in a certain security. Could you explain a little bit about that and how much you're able to sell at a loss in order to write it off in an individual brokerage account? Thank you.
Well, very simple. Any losses you take can offset any gains that you make in your taxable brokerage account. You can also carry forward losses up to $3,000 per year, but that's pretty simple. That's tax loss selling. A lot of people do that near year end. That also typically exacerbates the trends in the market. You look in 2022, for example, so many tech names are down a lot, and in December, that pushed them down even more into year end as people were taking their losses to offset gains elsewhere. Maybe they took on other positions earlier in the year. And so, yeah, you can certainly sell those and offset those gains. So, that's the basic nature of taxable accounts. Now let's talk about working from home. And early on in the pandemic, there were many studies that touted that working from home made workers more productive. A Harvard study found an 8% increase in the number of calls handled per hour by employees of an online retailer, for example. But that was talked about for a while, but the revised paper published in May of last year by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York said that that efficiency actually declined to -4%. Okay, so in fact, those workers, as they, you know, continue to monitor them the same way they did before over time, it's shown that they became less efficient. And they did this because they received more data, more detailed schedules, and the quality of the interactions continued to suffer as well. More customers were put on hold. There were more unresolved problems. And it was clear that that clear-cut answer that, hey, working from home was more efficient wasn't really true. And then other studies started to come out, one from MIT in joint with UCLA, and they found that those working from home were 18% less productive than their peers in office. And then a study from University of Chicago found a productivity shortfall as much as 19% for remote workers at a large IT firm. And other studies say that creativity is inhibited when you're on video conference calls versus in office. And that's, I think, pretty obvious. It's hard for people to collaborate. And it's not efficient to run to your neighbors and your coworkers for assistance. Figure out how to resolve a problem. And another major issue is the fact that people learn less. It's harder to pick up skills from your colleagues when you're not sitting next to them on a day-to-day basis. So it's pretty clear that from a productivity standpoint, working from home generally is not better for the business. Now, it's better for the individual. More workers feel like they have a better work-life balance when they work from home. It makes happier employees. They spend less time commuting. They can go pick up their kids from school, go to doctor's appointments, things like that. Maybe get a workout in. Just be more efficient throughout their day as opposed to drive to work, stay there for 8 hours, then go get your stuff done, go to the gym, etc. And studies have shown actually workers would be willing to take a pay cut to work from home versus an office. So maybe having satisfied employees on slightly lower pay might be better, a better deal for employers. But when you're thinking about what's going on with office, and I think there's still a lot of issues with the office market, the fundamentals of work from home are clearly not one-sided. In many industries, it makes more sense for at least a hybrid environment. And I think that maybe is where most industries land. But you could fade the office decline and say, hey, more workers will return because of that productivity gap. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And tell your friends that the new Invest Talk podcast is available in video form on our YouTube channel. Just search Invest Talk with two T's. Now, independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial.